Self.
Yes, I do fashion and catwalk modelling. I don't do any grid girling because then I wouldn't be taken seriously and it's not something I would choose to do.
Annalisa, we'll leave it there, but thank you so much for talking to us. And Desiree, great to meet you. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Well, the serial this week on Women's Hour features five self-contained plays dramatised from the Russian epic novel Life and Fate by Vasily Grossman. And today, Dame Janet Sussman reads the letter Victor receives from his mother, written before her death at the hands of the Nazis.
Life and Fate. Anna's Letter. Ukraine, September 1941.
This letter to my son, Viktor Pavlovich Strum, by hand, by whatever means possible. Vitya, I'm certain that this letter will reach you, even though I'm now behind German lines, behind the barbed wire, the Jewish ghetto. I know also that I will never receive your answer. I want you to know about my last days. Like that, it will be easier for me to die. The Germans entered the town on July the 7th. I was on my way back from the surgery. There was a radio broadcasting the news in the park. I stopped to listen. Then I heard shooting. People began to run across the park. I set off home. Then I saw a tank in the street. And someone shouted, "It's the Germans." It was. I knew, as I walked home, that I would never see you again. I felt utter horror. Then I understood how lucky I was, because you were safe. All that night, the neighbours were rushing around to each other's rooms, but I went to bed, and when I woke up, I felt a terrible sadness. I was in my own room, in my own bed, but I felt as if I were in a foreign country, alone and lost. The caretaker's wife was standing below my window, and I heard her say, "Well, that's the end of the Jews. Thank God for that." What can have made her say that, Vidya? Her son's married to a Jew. She used to tell me all about her grandchildren. The woman next door with a little daughter, Alyonushka with beautiful blue eyes, came round and said to me, "Anna Semyonovna, I'm moving into your room. Can you clear your things out by this evening?" When I came back after work, I found the door to my room had been smashed down and all my things piled in the little room. At the surgery, I and another Jewish doctor were dismissed. When I asked for my wages due, I was told, by people I'd worked with for years, "Stalin can pay you. Write to him in Moscow." An announcement was made. Jews were to be resettled. Little yellow notices were hung on the houses. All occupants are required to move to the old town by not later than 6 p.m. on the 15th of July, 1941. Anyone remaining will be shot. We were allowed 15 kilograms of belongings. I took a pillow, some bedclothes, the cup you once gave me, a knife and two forks. Do we really need so very much? I took some medical instruments, your letters, photographs of my mother and Uncle David, and of you and your father. A volume of Pushkin, some Chekhov, including A Boring Story and The Bishop. Daudet's Letters from My Windmill, Maupassant's A Life. And that was that. As I was carrying my basket to the old town, a patient of mine appeared, a gloomy and rather callous man, I'd always thought, called Shchukin. He picked up my things, gave me some bread, 300 rubles, and said once a week he'd come to the wire and give me more bread. Do you know, Vitchinka, after that, I began to feel I was a human being again. Shchukin told me a decree had been printed. Jews are forbidden to walk on the pavement. They must wear a yellow Star of David. They may no longer use public transport, baths, parks, or cinemas. They may not buy butter, eggs, milk, berries, white bread, meat, anything other than potatoes. The old town will be fenced off with barbed wire, and no one allowed out except for forced labour. Can you guess what I felt once I was behind the barbed wire? I felt relieved. Now I no longer have to look around me and see the people I've lived with all my life, see their faces, their hate and scorn. Here we're all unfortunate human beings, not beasts of some kind. And yet, you see, Vichinka, I never used to feel I was a Jew. As a child, my friends were Russian. My favourite writers were Russian. I remember seeing Stanislavski's production of Uncle Vanya. How I wept. How the whole audience wept. I thought always I am a Russian. But now, during these terrible days, my heart has become filled with a maternal tenderness towards the Jewish people. I never knew this love before. It's as strong as my love for you, my dearest son, my Vichinka. I don't want to console you by saying everything is fine. This is not a time for anything except the truth. But I'm not hungry. I'm not hungry. And I have discovered so many dear, good people. The tailors and tinsmiths, Spielberg, the eccentric old teacher and chess player, Ravitch, the engineer, who's as helpless as a child, but dreams of arming the ghetto with homemade bombs. You see, hope almost never goes together with reason. It's something quite irrational and instinctive. People carry on as if their whole lives lie ahead of them. It's impossible to say whether that's wise or foolish. It's just the way people are. I do the same myself, even though there are those here who tell us the Germans are killing all Jews, the old and children too. But we go on hoping, because everything we are rejects the terrible fact that we must all perish without trace. I look around myself and I simply can't believe it. All of us executed. The hairdressers, the cobblers, the tailors, the doctors, the stove menders, the bakers, the teachers. Yes, we all keep busy and time passes, days pass. And today, Vichinka, today the Germans came and took 80 young men to dig potatoes. Some are glad, saying there'll be more food, but I know too well what the Germans mean by potatoes. I always brought you up to tell the truth, and I know you do, sometimes to your own disadvantage. Well, I must tell the truth too. I'm not a strong woman. I'm weak. I'm afraid of pain. As a child, I was afraid of darkness and thunder. As an old woman, I'm afraid of illness and loneliness. Now, Victor, I'm seized in the night by the horror that I'm about to die. I want to call out to you for help. When you were a little boy, you used to run to me for protection. Now I want to hide my head on your knees. I want you to be strong and wise. I want you to protect and defend me. But enough of that. I have dreams every night. I often see my mother and talk to her. Last night, I dreamed of being in Paris. But I haven't once dreamed of you. I dreamed that someone, sometime in the future, I suppose, was walking past our old house. It was in ruins, and I heard quite clearly someone saying, There was a doctor who used to sit there under the old pear tree. I can't remember her name, but I once went to her to have my eyes tested. And in the morning I wake up and look at the ceiling and remember that the Germans are on our land and I'm a leper. And it's as though I haven't woken up at all but just gone to sleep and have started to dream. We heard today from a peasant who was driving by the wire that the men who were taken to dig potatoes have made 4 deep ditches outside town on the road to Romanovka. Remember that name, Vitya, because that's where I'll be. As though some terrible breath has passed over people's faces, everyone knows the end is approaching. And I watch the children running to school in the morning, and even they have a quite unchildlike seriousness now, and then, quite suddenly, they begin laughing and fighting and fooling about, and last night I saw very clearly how this whole noisy world of bearded, anxious fathers and shrewd grandmothers who bake honey cakes, this whole world of marriage customs, old sayings and Sabbaths will disappear forever under the earth. After the war, life will begin to stir again. But we won't be here. We will have vanished, just as the Aztecs once vanished. Vichinka, I'm finishing this letter and taking it to the wire to hand it to my friend Shchukin. It's not easy to break off. It's my last conversation with you. What can I say? These last days, as during my whole life, you've been my joy. I have remembered you at night, the clothes you wore as a boy, your first books. I have remembered your first letter, your first day at school. I have remembered your anger and your tears, your laughter and your tantrums, your triumphs and your defeats. I have remembered the day of your graduation, the day of your marriage, the day my granddaughter was born. I have remembered everything, from the first day of your life to the last glimpse I had of you. I've closed my eyes, my dearest, and imagined you shielding me from all that is approaching. And I have remembered then what is happening here and felt joy that you are far away from me now and that this terrible thing will pass you by. Well, enfin. Always be happy with those you love, those around you, those who have become closer to you than your mother. Forgive me. How can I finish? Where can I find the strength? There's so much I haven't told you, so much I always wanted to tell you, so much I thought, yes, one day we will sit down together and... But my fate is to end my life alone, never having shared it with you. Remember that your mother's love is always with you, in grief and happiness, and that no one and nothing has the strength to destroy it. Nichenka, this is the last line of my last letter to you. Live, live, live forever. Mama.
Anna's letter was read by Dame Janet Sussman, and there's more from Life and Fate in this afternoon's drama slot with an introduction to life on the front line in Stalingrad. And there'll be more on Woman's Hour all this week. Thank you so much to everybody who's taken the time this morning to email the programme, particularly about our first discussion on caring for older carers. I'm reading some of the emails now and they really are incredibly moving. So thank you all very much. And I know as well that many of you have really appreciated Dame Janet Sussman's monologue as well. Join me tomorrow just after 10.
Woman's Hour was presented by Jean Garvey and produced by Jean Thurlow. The editor is Jill Burridge. Beauty icons from the past talk about losing their looks and getting older, including a former Bond girl and a 1960s model. That's in After I Was Gorgeous, coming up after the news. But looking ahead over on Radio 4 Extra today, it was 30 years ago this week that a spotty, angst-ridden teenager first put pen to paper and followed in the eminent steps of Samuel Pepys, just aged 13 and three quarters.
Sunday, January the 11th. Now I know I am an intellectual. I saw Malcolm Muggeridge on the television last night, and I understood nearly every word. It all adds up. A bad home, poor diet, not liking punk. I think I will join the library and see what happens.
Sue Townsend's comic creation and satire on the 1980s, The Secret Diary of Adrian Mole, aged 13 and three quarters, starts this afternoon at 2:15 over on BBC Radio 4 Extra.